Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most.
Whether it's reactions,
matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about.
Your football talk, your way.
Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Good morning and happy holidays. This is a later edition of the Morning Shift right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are live here in the Kia studios, and this later edition has the likes of Dylan Matthews with us and
Jim
Butler joining us here on the show. We got Garrett Chapman back there producing this baby. So, and I'm Tiffany. So good morning. How's it going, guys?
Good morning. Great morning. A holiday edition of the Morning Shift. I'm glad to be sitting in with y'all. Obviously, it could be a better morning having stayed up until almost midnight last night to see the Atlanta Falcons lose in overtime. But a very entertaining game, and surely we have a bunch to talk about.
A whole lot to talk about. I was going to say, what did you guys do last night? But I think everybody was pretty much doing the same
thing. I was watching the game in Philadelphia because I was in, for the holidays, I was in Maryland with my girlfriend and her family. And then we went from Maryland to Philadelphia, took the train, not the midnight train, it was a little bit earlier than that, but we took the train, the Amtrak over to Philly, watched the Eagles beat up on the Cowboys because she is an Eagles fan.
Were you at the game?
I was at the game.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Did you wear your Eagles jersey?
No. See, Tiffany, that is just, we don't need to start this. We don't need to start. No. Drew, just so you're aware, they always try to push this false narrative on me that I'm an Eagles fan when I'm not. My girlfriend is an Eagles fan, so we go to some games together. But I'm a diehard Falcons fan. I'm an ATLian. I am born and raised here.
Okay.
And, you know, she does, you know, have a stronghold in the relationship, but it's okay. It's
all Most good. Women do.
Yeah, exactly. So it's all good. But, yeah, I was watching the game in Philly, then caught a plane back here this morning, and here we are.
What time did your plane take off?
5 a.m.
Oh, okay. Good for you.
Oh.
Delta?
Southwest.
Southwest, making it happen.
Took off at actually 5:15 to be exact. Got here at 7:15 and
came
straight here.
You were right on time.
Yeah, man.
You beat Tiffany in this morning.
Yeah.
I would have actually been here a lot sooner. I would have been here a lot sooner, but where you have to go pick up your bags, the bag carousel, it got stuck.
Look,
and it was stuck for 30 minutes.
Of course.
I had some travel woes coming back from my basketball game this weekend, but that's another discussion for another time. Because
right.
I think some people are feeling some woes and some highs from the Falcons' performance on Sunday Night Football against the Washington Commanders, a game that came down to overtime in which the Commanders took it 30-24. Michael Penix, I'd say, is the future very bright
For
Michael Penix here in Atlanta.
I jumped off my couch when he threw the game tying touchdown to none other than Kyle Pitts. A hell of a catch by Kyle Pitts as well. Super gutsy performance by Michael Penix. Really didn't stutter one bit in crunch time. And I thought the play calling was pretty good. I thought the clock management was very bad. Tale of two halves for the Atlanta Falcons. They looked great in the first half, and then the Commanders just played keep away the entire second half. I believe the Commanders scored on three out of their four drives in the second half, and then, of course, dominated in overtime, scored a touchdown to not only win but also cover, which stung for a lot of Falcons fans.
Right. Glad you mentioned the clock management, because everyone's talking about Michael Penix, but they're also talking about how the game was managed after he threw that touchdown pass to tie things up. There was a minute 19 left on the clock. And, yeah, some people might have been thinking, let's call a timeout here or there. Well, here's Coach Raheem Morris on exactly that.
We could have. You know, I thought we can get to the line of scrimmage with our operation, be a little bit faster there, get him there without going on the fast and our ball, try to save that timeout. In hindsight, could have been a good decision or a better decision to take that timeout, but I wanted to have the opportunity to move up there. So, like, you know, always second-guess those things. You can always second-guess those motives. You can always go back and look at him, see if you can get it snapped a little bit quicker. But I really believe we can get our operation time a little bit faster there to be able to save that timeout, still be able to click off, potentially get the pass interference, have a couple more snaps there, save the timeouts, and be able to use them there to get that field goal a little bit closer.
Yeah, think about that. I mean, not only did Michael Penix lead that drive to tie up the game, but then the defense got off the field, got the Falcons the ball back with two timeouts left. Penix makes a great throw to Darnell Mooney around the minus 45-yard line. There's 33 seconds left in the game. You have two timeouts, and nobody calls a timeout. And then the clock winds down, and thankfully they get a pass interference call to get them into field goal range. Riley Patterson, who's been with the team,
was
a 56-yarder. He kind of got under it a little bit. It was really spinny. It landed about 5-6 yards short, takes it into overtime. And as soon as the Commanders won the toss, Dylan, you felt like it might be over.
Drew, let me ask you this, because obviously you played the game at a professional level. Is there nobody to get in Raheem Morris's ear to be like, hey, Rod, should we call Tyler? I know he's the head coach. I know he calls the final shots, but is there anybody else there to help him? I mean, we have the assistant head coach.
Yeah.
I mean, is there nobody there to say, hey, Rod, we should probably burn a timeout?
No, there definitely is. There's analytical people who are upstairs in the booth. Sometimes they're down on the sideline, but they are there to confirm or deny what a head coach's situational football management should be. And I do want to say one thing, because obviously Raheem Morris, the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, is taking a brunt of the blame for his clock management at the end of regulation yesterday and at the end of the first half. But the Falcons did get a field goal to avoid total disaster. I need to ask the question as to why didn't Michael Penix call a timeout there? Yes, I know he's a rookie. Yes, I know it was his first ever road start. Yes, I know it was his second start ever. He did an amazing job managing that game, getting the Falcons into field goal range. But even as a rookie, with all the experience that he has, after that completion to Darnell Mooney, with 33 seconds left on the clock and two timeouts, he looks over to the sideline. Obviously, he's got his in-helmet communications on as well. They're not taking a timeout. You're the quarterback. You have an opportunity there to burn a timeout and say, what are we doing? How do we not take a timeout there? I'd love to hear from the listeners if they agree or disagree, because Michael Penix Jr., he played well, but he's not even in the conversation of why the Falcons didn't take a timeout there. 404-726-0929.
I want to take it a step further, too. Why didn't anybody on the team could have called a timeout? I mean, we have veterans
usually
on that
it's head
team,
coaches,
too.
Obviously. And right. Michael Penix Jr. said that after the game. Hey,
yeah.
That's Coach Ross' job. We lean on him and we trust him. The only other person who can call a timeout in that situation is the quarterback. Simply put, quarterback, middle linebacker on defense. That's it. Michael Penix Jr. easily could have called a timeout and bailed out his head coach. You then have the ability to kind of reset on offense. You save a ton of time, and you're able then to have more opportunity to move the ball further down the field to make it a bit more of an attainable field goal to win the game in regulation.
So there's how the game finished. There's also the performance of Michael Penix and what he did in his rookie season under the bright lights of Sunday Night Football. Also, Jaden Daniels, too. This is a matchup that you could probably look forward to seeing again in the future as these guys continue to progress in the league. Again, we do want to hear your thoughts on how it all went down in this overtime loss for the Atlanta Falcons against the Washington Commanders. You can call us at 404-726-0929. You can give us your thoughts on the clock management or tell us about your thoughts on Michael Penix and what he showed you on Sunday Night Football.
And I just want to say this. I know people are calling for Raheem Morris's job, saying he should be fired. Him and Terry Fontenot at this point. I think that's ludicrous. I know people are upset. I know people are out of their minds about how he handled it. But at the end of the day, and I know people have said this isn't his first rodeo. Obviously, he was a head coach in Tampa Bay, so you can't give him that excuse. And I understand all that. Look, I'm not trying to make excuse for Raheem Morris. I'm just saying he shouldn't be fired because of this. That to me is just such a knee-jerk reaction. And sometimes we need to slow down as Atlanta fans. I know we've been through a lot. We've been hurt. I've been hurt. We've all been hurt in this room.
That's where it all comes from.
But that's just too far, I think. I think with the job Raheem Morris has done managing this team, managing the Kirk Cousins situations, knowing when it was time to make that move from Kirk to Michael Penix, I don't think he needs to be fired because of it. Was this a bad moment for Raheem? Yes. But I think obviously he'll learn from it. I think firing is too harsh.
So that brings me back to the question of Michael Penix not calling a timeout in that situation. Mm-hmm. If you do make the decision to play Michael Penix earlier in the season, he's more in tune with those types of in-game situations, end-of-game situations.
So
to
are you
know,
on that
hey,
side of things? Because that's what I was seeing. A lot of people saying, oh, well, we should have started him.
Well,
earlier.
I'm just saying, in an end-of-game situation like that, where you only get that experience by playing in that moment in a football game, you know, hey, I can call a timeout here. I have two timeouts. I can burn that timeout. Now, would the Falcons have been in that situation if Kirk Cousins was the starting quarterback last night? I don't know. Would Kirk Cousins have called that timeout after that completion? Probably, because he's got more experience. That is what I'm saying as to when people are going, why didn't you play Penix earlier? If you did play Penix earlier, I can almost guarantee you he's got more experience and more wherewithal to make that decision to call that timeout, which could have certainly altered the outcome of the game.
While we have a few minutes here, I do want to ask just kind of a – I think I know the answer, but I do want to ask a question. Was there any thought in your mind at the end of the game when Penix threw that game-tying – touchdown, and I know the time on the clock was a thing. Was there any thought in your mind about them going for two?
Yeah, I mean, why not? Because Jaden Daniels is him.
Yeah.
I mean, that dude is absolutely elite. You give him an opportunity to take over a game, and he did just that in overtime. The third and two where he got outside the pocket and outran Grady Jarrett and made a move, extended the chains. He knew, hey, I can win this football game right here, right now. Look. That is a coin flip decision. Yep. Raheem Morris is talking again, Dylan, with those analytical guys. They're saying, go for it. We do not want to go into overtime. But you got to give the Falcons defense a lot of credit because they got the ball back to the offense. And Michael Penix did play great. And he made those completions. And he got them back into field goal range. I thought it was interesting. Mike Tirico on the broadcast last night, when Riley Patterson came out for his first field goal, mentioned that he had a rough warm-up.
Yep.
Those guys are watching it, right?
Yeah.
He said, this will be interesting. Riley Patterson had a rough warm-up. And I'm also hearing some people saying, well, why did Raheem Morris put him out there for a 56-yarder if he knew he couldn't make it? That's not Raheem Morris's job.
No.
Riley Patterson is warming up with the special teams coordinator. They're charting his warm-up. He's having a discussion, the kicker, with the special teams coordinator. Here's my distance in this end zone. Here's my distance in that end zone. Then the special teams coordinator relays that message to Raheem Morris in-game. Hey, we can kick it here. He's comfortable. Or, hey, we can't. This is not long enough or this is too long for our kicker to kick this field goal.
And you mentioned Tirico saying that just from the broadcast perspective and being in meetings and stuff and doing sideline for NFL games. You are asking those questions within your meetings, and so the coach is giving you an idea of where he thinks the kicker can, you know, how far out he can try to make a field goal. And so you already know those things coming in, and you do watch the warm-ups from the field just because you pick up little small things just like that.
And I know hindsight is 20/20, but with 2 seconds left at the point they were in, attempted a, what, 57-yard field goal there, 56-yard field goal there.
It's windy. It was gusty.
It's way more of a high-percentage play, though, than going for a Hail Mary. I mean, let's just be honest. I mean,
absolutely.
So
absolutely.
I don't at all question, again, them putting Riley Patterson out there.
Yeah,
I don't question any of those decisions.
It's to win the game.
Exactly.
The question is the events that took place leading up into that point to put them in position to have to try to kick a 56-yard field goal.
Yeah, that was definitely mismanaged. And, again, you hate to see it happen to a guy like Raheem because he's just so upbeat and he's so positive. So you hate to see Raheem Morris mismanage that situation, but it was what it was.
Hey, arrows are pointed everywhere because Falcons fans are fed up. They want to blame anybody that's in their sights, and I can certainly understand that. We got a ton of callers waiting on the line. We'll get to you after the break, Tiff.
Yeah, again, try to call us, 404-726-0929. Your thoughts on how the game was managed towards the end on Michael and on Michael Penix's performance. We'll take your calls up next here on The Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
I'm gonna say it again. Control what we can. You know, I mean, you can wish all day on somebody, but it ain't. We put ourselves in a situation. You know, we was this close to controlling our destiny, and we let it slip. And that's the reality of it. We got to let it hurt. We got to let it burn. The game start the season, that could have went our way. That didn't. That put us in this position. But we still got breath. You know what I'm saying? And we got to go out there and do what we got to do.
That was Atlanta Falcons Grady Jarrett postgame after the Falcons' tough loss in overtime to the Washington Commanders, 30-24. This is the Morning Shift, a later edition of the show, along with Drew Butler.
A special
and
edition.
Dylan Matthews, a special edition that is brought to you by All Four Seasons Garage and Entry Doors, big enough to serve, small enough to care. We are, by the way, taking your calls throughout this show, 404-726-0929, to hear what you have to say about the Falcons' loss to the Commanders.
Before we get to the calls, can I just say one thing? Because I was thinking about it during the break, and then hearing Grady Jarrett coming back just made me...
Broke your heart.
It broke my heart, Tiffany. Like, hearing Grady say that, because Grady has been an Atlanta Falcon through and through. He's never had any drama. He's always doing great stuff. Off the field, he was the Falcons' Walter Payton Man of the Year. Like, Grady is just such a Falcon and an ATLian at heart. I just feel so bad for him when guys like that may not get the opportunity that we thought they were all going to have this year to compete for a championship, get into the playoffs for the first time since 2017, and knowing that that is not quite out of reach, but very close to being out of reach, that just breaks my heart for Grady Jarrett.
Don't get it twisted. It's hard to make the playoffs in the National Football League.
For sure.
It's very hard to make the playoffs. It's even harder to make it to a Super Bowl, which, of course, Grady Jarrett was a part of in a game that we will not bring up because we're all hurting on this Sunday morning.
We hurt today.
I do want to make that point because everybody here in Atlanta, when the Falcons were 6-3, it was just an expectation. Falcons are going to win the division. We're going to host a home playoff game. We'll see what happens in January. Just a couple of years ago, 2018, Bills defensive tackle Kyle Williams, who was drafted in 2008, had never played in a playoff game before. It is tough to make the playoffs in the NFL. When you hear Grady in that cut we just played, he's hurt. It stings because he knows it's out of their control now. The only hope they have is if Tampa loses to the lowly New Orleans Saints in Tampa on Sunday. And, of course, the Falcons still have to take care of business against the Panthers in Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
All right, let's take your calls. We're going to the lines. We have Danny on the WadeFord.com hotline out of North Atlanta. Good morning, Danny.
What was happening? And so,
what up, Danny? What you got?
Looks like we've lost Danny's call. We're moving on to Jonathan in Villa Rica. What's up, Jonathan?
Hey, how's everybody doing?
Good. How are you?
Good.
I just wanted to say I feel like that Raheem really should have did better when it came to managing the timeouts in the fourth and second quarter. But first off, in the fourth quarter, I feel like Darnell Mooney should have just ran out of bounds. I feel like no one's bringing that up. This was a drive we already had did in against the Eagles, and he ran it to perfection then. I feel like he should have ran out of bounds. But regardless, as a coach, Raheem's been in the league or around football long enough to know to take a timeout there. So I'm not going to overreact and say he should be fired because we've had a decent season, but I just would like to see him take that time out when it's there. So that's all I'm going to say.
We appreciate the call, Jonathan.
Yeah, Jonathan makes a good point. They're actually showing it on one of our TV screens now, the exact play that Jonathan's talking about where Michael Penix throws a kind of deep, what it was, out route to Darnell Mooney, and he turns towards the middle of the field instead of turning towards the sideline to get out of bounds. He makes a good point there, and Darnell Mooney definitely could have had the wherewithal to get out of bounds, but I don't blame Darnell Mooney because at that point, you're just trying to make the play. You're trying to make the catch. And so you don't want to think too much as an NFL player. I mean, Drew can attest to that. I mean, when you're able to just play and not necessarily go out there and think. And so Darnell was doing that. He just made a football play. And yes, I know that comes with football 101. I know Drew's probably about to say that. But I would rather Darnell do what comes natural to him and make the play and let Raheem coach and actually call the timeout like he was supposed to do, then Darnell having to be like, okay, I gotta worry about catching the ball. I gotta worry about going out of bounds, and then he end up dropping the ball or whatever. So,
well, watch the replay. 24 Davis, the DB for the Commanders, blocks off the sideline.
That's a good
immediately
point.
Wraps up Mooney and gets him on the ground quickly. So when he did give up a huge chunk play for the Falcons to get towards midfield, he did his job by not allowing Mooney to get out of bounds, thus Raheem should have called a timeout, and or when Michael Penix looks over to the sideline, the quarterback knows he has two timeouts. He could have put his hands up, called a timeout, and said, man, what are we doing?
There you go.
Perhaps you feel the same way. Back to the lines we go. We got Big James waiting on us on the west side. Good morning, Big James. Big James, you with us?
Yep.
What up, Big James?
Yeah, what up, dude?
What's up, my guy?
Yo, so look, I didn't have a problem. I didn't think we was going to be that close in the game for real. I really was surprised how well we played. But the thing that I was most disappointed about was the referees. Illegal contact on D'Angelo Malone was crazy.
Yeah.
Am I the only one who was watching? I'm like, what is going on? And then the center keeps pulling the dude on the ground. Man, I think we keep getting cheated on national TV. I don't like it, man.
You don't like it? No, we appreciate the call. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, that's a good point, but I can't blame it on the refs. You had way too many opportunities to where you can control what you can control. And, I mean, at the end of the day, that's what everybody says, what Dream Morris says. And there was also a false start towards, what was it, the second to last play of the game by, I think it was the Commander's right tackle, excuse me. And I think it was a pretty clear false start. But, again, if you're relying on the referees to get a win, you don't deserve to win.
I do want to go back to what he said, though. He was surprised that they were in this game, right? Because the Commanders have been rolling behind Jaden Daniels. And I think maybe some other people felt the same way. But with that surprise, they're like, all right, Michael Penix is legit. And that's like the positive that you could probably take away from a loss like this that stung. But he played well.
The loss did sting. He played well. And I think Michael Penix Jr. would be the first person to tell you he missed some throws as well. You know, we've come to expect pristine accuracy from a guy who just played his second NFL game. But there were throws out there that he wishes he could have had back, open receivers.
Yep.
The touch was a little bit off. He was overthrowing some guys, which, again, is to be expected. And it brings me back to the point of if he had more opportunities to get in-game reps throughout this season, would those be sharper throws? Would he have better in-game management? To me, the answer is clear. It's a resounding yes.
So, Drew, with that, let me ask you this. At what point do you think he should have been put in by Raheem?
It's a great question. You know, I think a lot of people were sitting there going up to Minnesota saying, you got to do it now. That was a really tough spot. Blitz happy Vikings, really tough road environment. A lot of reasons to play Kirk Cousins in that game. It was pretty much, hey, this is going to be your last chance. And then, of course, he got one more chance in Las Vegas on that Monday night. There's never a right time. And again, like this is why Falcons fans are so upset and the arrows are pointed everywhere. Terry Fontenot, Arthur Blank, Raheem Morris, Kirk Cousins, everybody is catching blame in this moment because you look back, hindsight's always 20/20, but with how well Michael Penix has played in his first two starts, just makes you question some of the decision-making that's going on to say, hey, how could our season have been different because it was so much different when the Falcons were 6-3. So much different. I can't believe we're in this position right now.
Back to the lines we go. George waiting on us. What's up, George?
Good morning, good morning, good morning, everybody.
Good morning, George.
I really believe Falcons fans should be really, really happy. Forget about the game. Look forward to your future. I never thought I would be saying this. I never thought that George would be saying this, but the Falcons got an amazing future ahead of them. You got a running back who, if I were Falcons, I would use him the same way in Indy and St. Louis used Marshall Faulk. And I would be drafting linemen, offensive and defensive linemen, and linebackers for the rest of the next 2 or 3 years because if used like that, there's something special. Now, the only thing I'm going to fault the coaching for is that Dan Quinn was Dan Quinn in his coaching. There was a cornerback that was getting burnt all day long. And why they did not target that guy the rest of the game, I do not know. But I will say this. Hindsight being 2020, and I remember how bad Peyton Manning looked as a rookie quarterback, and he was probably one of the most cerebral quarterbacks ever coming into the league. I would dare say that Michael Pittman did learn a lot by having the chance to watch the game.
You are right.
Before he was put in that atmosphere.
You know what, George? You are right about that. He did have a lot of time to get some experience from just watching the game. There's a lot to be said for that perspective on it.
Yeah, and to George's point too, Davis, the corner he's referencing, that was in because of the injured Marshon Lattimore, who couldn't go last night. He was getting cooked, and he was getting cooked pretty often. But look, I know he could have went to him more, but that's something where, again, you don't want to just completely necessarily abandon your game plan. I don't know if that's even the right term for it, but you don't want to just completely throw away everything that you're doing and be like, nope, we're just going to target that all night. And look, but I understand if it ain't broke, don't fix
that's
it.
That's what you do in the NFL. And I had a coach with the Pittsburgh Steelers, Danny Smith. He would say this: hey, there's three differences in levels of football. Mm-hmm. High school football, you play the game on Friday night, you come back on Monday, you watch the tape maybe, hey, we'll fix it for next week. College football, you play the first half, things go that way for 30 minutes, you come in at halftime, you make the adjustments. Mm-hmm. NFL football, you better fix it the next play, or they're coming right back to it. It's exactly what the Falcons did with Davis last night, the inexperienced DB. It's what Michael Penix took advantage of. I commend them for continuing to do that. But Raheem Morris's comments after the game, hey, it could have been a better decision to take the time out there. Hey, we could have maybe done things differently. I mean, that's just a bad look, and it makes all the fans and prognosticators and opinionists around the NFL say, what on earth were they doing? And it's exacerbated by them not using a timeout at the end of the first half when they had three in their pocket. Again, thank God they got 3 points. Would have avoided total disaster. But so many NFL games come down to one play or one score. It's all about situational football. What do you do on third downs? What do you do in the last 4 minutes of the first half? What do you do in the last 2 minutes of the game? The Falcons failed miserably at that last night. And, of course, that blame is going to fall squarely on the shoulders of the head coach.
Yeah, speaking of third down, too, just real quick, Tiff, I'm sorry. Just being real quick, the Falcons were really, really bad on third down, too, last night. And that's another point, part of the game, Drew, that you mentioned that we need to bring up because, again, just how bad they were on third down. And the second half, too, really stalled the few drives they did get because they were so bad on third
down. Yeah, Commanders made great adjustments at halftime. I just want to give a huge shout-out to Michael Penix Jr. one more time. Because one person that is probably very happy that they made it to overtime is center Drew Dahlman after that poor snap in the Wildcat. Gosh. Michael Penix Jr. did not flinch. He said, watch this. Three more plays, they score a touchdown to Kyle Pitts. That was incredible to see from a rookie in his second ever start, first ever start on the road.
One more caller, and if we didn't get to you, we are taking calls again at the top of the hour at 10 o'clock, so we'll hear from you then. Let's go to Be Cool. Your thoughts on the Falcons' loss? Hey,
good morning. How y'all doing?
What's
good.
Up?
Doing good.
Be cool. Do you want us to be cool? Is that what you're going to say?
And well, I mean, it's kind of hard to be cool with a loss like that. You know what I'm saying? That tests the best of your cool when they lose like that again. You know, I've been a lifetime Falcons fan for 50 years, so I done got immune to the heartbreaks, the disappointing losses. You know. But what I did see last night was the future of the quarterback, the future of the Falcons, where we were competitive. And we didn't go out there and get stomped out.
We appreciate the call, Be Cool. That is true.
But before we go to break, can I say one thing?
No, you can't. 1 second. Because
okay, go
you
ahead.
Can say, when you talk about the future of Michael Penix and moving forward, people might think, oh, you spent all this money on Kirk Cousins. Was this a bad decision? I guess you could both sides it, right? Because
yeah,
you did get, he got you to 6-3, and you do have your quarterback now of the future.
Yeah. And all I want to say is, yes, I am very excited about the future. I'm excited about Michael Penix, Bijan, Drake London. I'm excited about all that. I'm excited about our future. But right now still stinks.
Yeah,
because
of course it does.
We had an opportunity to do something, and we still have somewhat of an opportunity. We don't control our destiny anymore, but we had an opportunity to do something we haven't done in 7 years. And it feels like we let it go by the wayside.
Hey, nobody wants to play Jaden Daniels in the playoffs. I can tell you that right now.
You're darn right about that.
No, you do not. Hey, when we come back, let's get you some college football CFP action. Georgia, Notre Dame on Wednesday. But what does the future hold for Carson Beck? We'll discuss next here on The Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back here on The Morning Shift, a special edition along with Drew Butler and Dylan Matthews here. I am Tiffany. It feels so weird to always say your name, but it's me.
Hi, Tiff.
So we are rolling along here. We talked a lot about the Falcons throughout this show, but this week is a big week if you're a Georgia Bulldog, because they have their first CFP game. They had the bye week for the first round, so now they will face Notre Dame, who cruised to a win over Indiana, and they will face them on Wednesday night.
Drew Butler, Georgia Bulldog, great. Yeah. I got to ask you a question. Are you buying into any of this? Because I've been hearing around the socials, and I've been hearing whisperings from talking heads and media pundits and all that stuff. Notre Dame is a good team. You don't get into the college ball playoff without being a very good team. But are they really that big of a threat to Georgia that I've been hearing about? I mean, I'm hearing that that Georgia fans need to be scared, that Georgia's on real upset alert. Are you buying into any of that?
That seems to be the national narrative. You're exactly right. I mean, look, Notre Dame opened as a 1.5-point favorite. That line has gone all the way through the number. Georgia sitting as a 1.5-point favorite right now. ESPN Analytics matchup predictor has Notre Dame with a 54.1% chance of winning this game. I would say all of that is pretty much directly correlated to Georgia not having Carson Beck.
Of course.
Carson Beck announces that he declared for the draft on Saturday morning, so he is done as a Georgia Bulldog. I think his legacy as a Georgia Bulldog is one that will be mixed, and for no other reason than maybe the public perception of who he was, because he won a ton of games for the Dogs. There's no question about it. Gunnar Stockton getting his first start in such a big moment. Granted, he did lead Georgia to an SEC championship in the second half against the nation's number one defense in Texas. That is the biggest question mark heading into this game. Historically, when Kirby Smart has a lot of time to prepare, things go very well for Georgia. And historically, from a recruiting perspective and a depth perspective, I'd be hard-pressed to think that Notre Dame is in a better situation than the Dogs this Wednesday.
And to follow up on that, because, like you said, Georgia, Kirby Smart, they have had all this time to prepare. Gunnar Stockton has had all this time to prepare.
Huge. Getting
first-team reps. So
it's absolutely massive. If this game would have happened a week after the SEC championship game, I think everybody would have been feeling a little bit bearish heading into the matchup. With him to have so much time to prepare, and for Coach Bobo and this offensive staff to really get the game plan underneath his belt to say, hey, you can trust this game plan. The guys around you know exactly what's going to happen. And you know, you're looking at the ticket get-in prices right now to the Superdome. It's like $44. You'll be able to get it. If you're in New Orleans, bring a 20, walk down Bourbon Street, you'll probably be able to walk into this game. I'm not saying that's going to make the atmosphere a little bit less than electric, but this is not as amped up of a game as maybe some playoff games have been in the past.
I want to go back to the Gunnar Stockton thing real quick, because I don't think he's going to be that limited. Like, as far as what the offense is going to be able to do, and I think they're going to be able to, for the most part, cut him loose. I mean, what do you think? I don't think he's going to be as limited as maybe people are thinking.
No, I think, one, they're going to put in a lot of packages for him to run the ball himself, which is going to keep the defense very honest and open up some play action opportunities for him to maybe stretch the field, take a couple of shots deep. But, two, to me, when you look at what Notre Dame had success with all season long, they were the bully. And when you try to out-Georgia, it presents a lot of issues. Again, going back to the talent that the Dogs have, going back to the depth that they have, I know Riley Leonard, as one of our callers on the Steakhouse mentioned last week, over 700 yards rushing on the season, 15 rushing touchdowns on the season. That's Notre Dame's quarterback. He is not like a Jalen Milroe. He is not like a Jaden Daniels with that fast twitch explosiveness where things break down in the pocket and then boom, you blink and he's gone. These are much more designed run plays, keeping him in between the tackles. I think that plays very well into Georgia's hands. I think this is a matchup that Georgia likes a lot. But it's all going to come down to the basics, and not to pile onto the Falcons, but it's exactly what the Falcons didn't do last night. Wrap up tackles, get off the field on third downs, manage situational football well. That's what's going to be the difference in this ball game. And I would have to take Kirby Smart over Marcus Freeman in those situations.
So I'm going to go back to Carson Beck here, who we know underwent surgery to repair that UCL ligament, which is redundant right there.
Yeah.
But he declared for the NFL draft, for the 2025 draft, on Saturday. He thanked the fans in a social media post. We discussed this on the show the previous week of whether or not he should come back for another year to try to improve his draft stock. I didn't think that it would be a good idea to come back. I was like, you should just go ahead and declare for the draft.
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
I think he made the right decision. I mean, I don't think if he would have come back, it would have been to Georgia. I think he would have tested the transfer portal market, seen what his value demanded with some other teams. I know there were some rumors over the weekend of possibly him going down to South Beach and joining up with the U, Miami Hurricanes, to where his girlfriend goes to school. Is, yeah. So obviously, I think those things were kind of made up on the social media rumor mill. But he projects as a mid-round pick, second to fourth round, I would assume, depending on how the rehab of that UCL surgery goes for him. He's got all the intangibles of being an NFL quarterback. There's no question about it. But, yeah, I mean, good for Carson Beck. Dude, the guy won a lot of games. My question to you both, and it was something that I saw in a lot of the media availability from Georgia leading up to the Sugar Bowl, was how many teammates of Gunnar Stockton mentioned, hey, he's not into NIL. He's not about the flashy stuff. He doesn't care about materialistic things. He just wants to work and win. To me, that is a direct shot at Carson Beck, whether they meant it or not, because I think that in the public perspective is what kind of shied away a lot of people from going all in on Carson Beck, was a lot of the extracurriculars around NIL and the new era of college football to when you were a starting quarterback at the number one team in the nation, that being Georgia, those things are going to come at you in droves.
And not only that, Drew, but to get all this NIL after a pretty successful last season season that he had last year, because a lot of people were talking about, hey, should Carson Beck come out last year because of how he played and how he finished the season. And so he ends up coming back. He obviously gets the deal where he has the Lamborghini now. He's got the
something shifted then for a hit.
No, I'm not saying something shifted for him. I'm just saying that could be to Drew's point, that could be the perspective and that could be what people are seeing.
Yes.
That could be the perception, yeah.
I can see that.
Through no fault of his own.
Yeah, no fault, yeah.
If a Lamborghini dealership in Atlanta wants to provide me with an advertisement right now here,
I'm taking it.
I'm here for you.
Right.
And I promise you I will over-deliver.
So we are in bowl season, as we know. And so you had Georgia Tech and Vanderbilt in the Birmingham Bowl, a game in which Tech lost to Vanderbilt 35-27. So it's the first time Vandy has won a bowl game since 2013.
Yeah, the officials were horrendous.
And it was Georgia Tech, the season they had had with some marquee wins, some signature wins there. It's the tough way for them to end.
It was tough. You know, the weather wasn't great in Birmingham. I thought it was a really great matchup. Vanderbilt and Georgia Tech both having pretty successful seasons given maybe the expectations leading into 2024. I thought the teams matched up very well. I was locked in. I wanted to see Tech perform well. Again, the officials were absolutely horrendous, but Georgia Tech lost their cool. The game started getting away from them. I think at one point it was 35-14 when it was very close, and Tech had every opportunity to be leading that game. And then, of course, a long weather delay, and Georgia Tech not able to find themselves back in it. But shame on those officials. It was horrible. Horrible. I don't even know. I mean, to me, if I was on that broadcast, I would have shredded them because it was that bad.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a sour way for Georgia Tech's what has kind of been a, I don't want to say Cinderella season, but that's kind of what it felt like. Just it's a sour way for them to end it, what has been such a good season for them. But like you said, fishes were bad between that, the weather delay. It was a spiral out of control. It spiraled out of control. Series of unfortunate events. Like you said, they lost their cool. Vandy scores 21 unanswered, and it was a bad way to end a very good season by Georgia Tech. But still, none of that should overshadow what Georgia Tech was able to accomplish this season.
Yeah.
And the future very bright for Georgia Tech as well.
What is your favorite Pop-Tart? Do you have one?
Ooh, I love all the Pop-Tarts, but s'mores. Definitely.
S'mores is goated for sure.
Tier. Yeah. That's number one.
The OG one that put me on to Pop-Tarts, so it's the brown sugar and cinnamon.
Of course.
That one's goated. I don't really like any of the fruit Pop-Tarts. And now look, when I first tried Pop-Tarts.
You really want to get them going. Talk about Pop-Tarts.
Hey, food is my thing. But when I first tried Pop-Tarts, I didn't like fruit as much, but now I like fruit more. So maybe the strawberry and the blueberry ones will taste better to
I'll
me.
I'll let
but,
you. Yeah.
Hot Fudge Sunday is good.
I digress.
Hot Fudge Sunday is good. The OGs, your frosted strawberry, s'mores. Your wild berry, your s'mores, those are good. I'm still confused as to why there is a big divide in the question of do you put your Pop-Tarts in a toaster oven?
Oh, because
I don't think it matters.
And the reason I bring up Pop-Tarts, of course, we're talking about the Pop-Tart Bowl that went down with number 13 Miami and number 18 Iowa State, with Miami winning 42-41. Iowa State winning 42 yeah. to 41 in that bowl. You have to toast your Pop-Tart. You have
yes.
to toast it.
Do you put butter on top of it?
Ew, gross.
Butter?
No. What?
Do you do that, Drew?
Come on, people.
Drew, you're
come on,
crazy.
People. I'm just telling you right now.
On what
butter?
Kind of Pop-Tart? If you like the plain surface
no.
Pop-Tart?
Frosted Pop-Tart.
You put butter on it?
Drew.
Listen, if you have an actual toaster oven where you can lay the Pop-Tart in instead
yes.
of like one you slide down like a bagel toaster oven,
yeah.
take a little pat of butter. Listen to me, people. Turn the radio up. Take a small sliver of butter, lay it on top of your Pop-Tart, throw that baby in the toaster oven. It's going to come out. The butter's going to be a little bit melted. Take a little knife. You get a nice little glaze of butter on top of your Pop-Tart. It is... Chef's kiff.
Oh, I thought
magic.
I've been doing that 1,000 times in my life.
This yeah. is all you have to do with a Pop-Tart. Look,
thank
if
you.
You're if you're
thank you.
If you're in a rush, you don't got a mic. You don't have to put it in a toaster.
Oh,
but
I can't hear anything you're saying.
This
now.
Is but it is better. It is better in the toaster. And also, if you don't even have to really put it in a toaster. Put it in a microwave for 20 seconds, and that's all you gotta
have
do.
Have you guys had the Pop-Tarts bites?
I have not.
Because those are popular with the kids now. They're dangerous. Buyer beware. If you go to Target or wherever and you get the Pop-Tarts bites. If you open up that box, they'll be gone very quickly.
Is the
little mini Pop-Tarts.
Is the Pop-Tart Bowl now the people's most favorite bowl outside
yes.
of New
Anytime
Year's 6?
Anytime you have a mascot jump into a toaster
yes.
and then come out the other side, and then a little bit of cannibalism is what they call it, but teams getting to pick off this Pop-Tart. Wait, guys, I do want to get to you real quick. Cam
yes.
Ward, though, and then we'll get back to take some Pop-Tarts. He only played in the first half for Miami and then sat out the second half. There wasn't a real... reason like that you heard during the game of why
yeah.
that happened.
Right.
Why do you guys think it
just
happened?
An overall
okay?
bad look. I mean,
yeah.
look, he started the game. I think in this day and age of sports betting, a lot of people, when they found out Cam Ward was going to play, maybe had taken the side of Miami. The Hurricanes are leading at half. He breaks an NCAA record for the most career touchdown passes in college football. And then inexplicably to the public, when you're watching on your TV set, you're like, why isn't he playing in the second half? It was then reported that he, quote-unquote, opted out of the second half to, of course, preserve his draft stock. I don't know, Tiff. I mean, we could go on and on about this. It's the new age of college sports. I'm seeing it's breaking right now. Six former Florida State basketball players are suing head coach Leonard Hamilton for over $1.5 million for unpaid, quote, promised NIL money. It's crazy.
College sports has just changed completely with NIL. We know that, but... quickly to get back to the Cam Ward thing, I think it was this simple. I think Cam Ward went into his head coach's office and said, hey, coach, look, I know you want me to play in this bowl game, and I get that, so I'll level with you. I have a record I want to break. I'll play until I break that record. Probably going to be the first half. Once I break that record, I'm done. And I think coach agreed.
Hey,
I think that
shout
was
out
it.
To Matthew Hale on X, at HRM Hale. He chimes in and says, at Drew Butler spitting the truth with butter on Pop-Tarts. It's the only way to go. Thank
what?
You.
Was that a real tweet, Drew? Let
That's
me see.
It. Right
Let me
here.
See.
Check it.
It's a real
right
tweet.
Here.
His affliction is food.
Thank you.
I haven't had a Pop-Tarts in probably like 20 years, I feel like.
Oh, it's and
like
I just got a text message from my man Monty Ortel at the Gassed Out District.
Oh,
dropping knowledge this morning. Hard agree with the butter on Pop-Tarts.
All right.
Thank you, people.
I'll try it. I'll try
it. I might consider coming out of Pop-Tart retirement.
There you
to
go.
To try this. Okay, when we come back here on the morning shift, the later edition of the show, we want to hear your thoughts. Top of the hour, Falcons Commanders. Bright future for Michael Penix. Clock management, you can weigh in. Call us at 404-726-0929. That is on the other side on here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We'll be right back.
You know, I think the young guy went out there and played his heart out. You know, obviously there's some throws you're always going to want back. There's always going to be some reps you want to have with those guys. But I love how he's fighting. I love how he's playing. I love the resiliency, the toughness, the poise, everything that he brings to the table. And we feel really good about our young guy and what he's going to bring to the table here moving forward.
As they should. That was Atlanta Falcons head coach Raheem Morris after their overtime loss to the Commanders 30-24. Him praising Michael Penix, who played for the first time on Sunday Night Football. He finished with 223 yards, that game-tying touchdown to
Kyle Pitts.
Kyle Pitts, thank you. And then he had the interception. But again, what a great performance for the young man.
Yeah, it really was. Again, he didn't shake. He did not back down whatsoever. Drew Dolman, of course, snaps that ball over Bijan Robinson's head down there near the goal line. Penix doesn't flinch. He finds Kyle Pitts a couple plays later to tie the game up. And while Falcons fans did not have a good night last night, and of course Raheem Morris didn't either, Zach Ertz did have a good night. Adam Schefter reports right now that just in overtime, tight end Zach Ertz caught three passes for 16 yards and a game-winning touchdown, clinching all three of his incentives, making that overtime an extra $750,000 for Zach Ertz.
Man.
Well, that's crazy. I did get to talk. I know people don't want to hear this about Zach Ertz. I talked to Dan Quinn. This was a few weeks ago when I was doing another pregame show for CBS. And he said that Ertz has that great catch radius for Jaden Daniels and a good knack for being in the red zone and coverages and all of that. So, yeah, he definitely brings a lot to the table, and it hurt for the Falcons.
You know, we played the Raheem cut of him saying, hey, we could have made a better decision. You know, you can always look back and do things differently. Surely he's going to get more questions to have to explain why he did not call the timeout rather than just the one-off or two questions in a post-game press conference. I don't know when that comes. I'm assuming that Arch is doing the coaches show tonight,
yeah,
as he usually does.
And then Raheem, I believe, does have a press conference today, so I would assume
he's
going to get peppered with questions today.
They're going to be asking, do you have an analytics guy? Do you have an in-game situation guy in the headphones? Why wasn't Michael Penix Jr. allowed to call a timeout there? Again, I get it. Michael Penix Jr., first ever road start, second ever start as an NFL quarterback. That right there is in-game situational football. You have two timeouts. The only other person that usually has permission to call a timeout other than the head coach is the quarterback. Michael Penix Jr. could have called a timeout as well. There was 33 seconds left on the game clock. You had two timeouts when Darnell Mooney caught it at the minus 45. You've got to take a timeout there to reset your offense.
And you know someone's passionate about it when you've got the fists going on the desk.
I do.
Butler out here, you know, talking about spitting facts about what he feels like, you know, could have happened late in the game in terms of the management. Real quickly before we go to the callers.
It just doesn't make sense to me that, again, he has been around the block before. This isn't his first time being a head coach. I was the head coach of Tampa. He was interim here in Atlanta when Dan Quinn got fired from here. I just don't understand, like, how long does it take to kick in? Or I know it's every situation is different, but, like, I just don't get how long it'll take to kick in to be well-versed in those moments, to be able and to have the wherewithal to know, like, okay, this is a situation where I have to call a timeout. Like, how long does it take for that to click for a guy? I mean, is it because he hasn't been a head coach for a while? I mean,
I think that the most maddening thing is that situational football is – you know, NFL games come down to five plays.
Yeah.
And that's why the NFL is the best league in our country, is because the games are so close. There's so much parity. It always comes down to the last few minutes. You can look at any game and say, hey, these five plays determined the outcome of the football game. When I played for the Steelers on Monday mornings, Mike Tomlin would do that. He would put up five plays in the team meeting that says win, lose, or draw. These are the five plays that the coaching staff said determine the outcome of the game. And in situational football, when you use your timeouts, 2-minute drill, 4-minute drill before the half, so many times, and that's how Bill Belichick made all of his bones as the New England Patriots and one of the greatest coaches of all time, knowing how to win situational football.
Drew, I just want to ask you one more quick question before we get to the callers. We talk about how players look at film, obviously coaches look at film. Is this something that Raheem can work on? I don't know if there's like a drill is the right phrase for it, but is there a way he can work on this himself? Like, and in situations like, is there some sort of thing they'll do to practice this? Like, is there a way he can do that?
Yeah, I mean, look, you always practice 2-minute drill and 4-minute drill when you're getting ready for a game, and you work on timeouts and clock situations, but the best practice for it is actual in-game experience. Unfortunately, he got that experience in the wrong fashion last night, but I'm really interested to hear what our callers have to say, Tiff.
So let's go to Brandon on the line in Kennesaw. Good morning, Brandon. All right, let's move on to TJ in Monroe. Good morning, TJ.
Good morning, good morning. First time caller, long time listening.
We appreciate you.
I really just got a problem with not really a problem, but I want to know why nobody bringing up D. Alford. A call a while ago brought up Carl Davis from the Redskins, from the Commanders. Why has no one brought up D. Alford play this year? And it has not been good. I know the station I built to bash people, but we put Kyle Pitts' name in a lot of stuff. D. Alford needs to be talked about. Thank you for the call.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know if anybody in the station's told not to bash people. Clearly, we're doing that this morning, and Kyle Pitts has brought that on himself. He made a hell of a play last night. Probably the best play that he's made as an Atlanta Falcon. There's no question about it, but as I said earlier, the arrows are out everywhere. I mean, everybody is catching blame. I thought the defense played relatively well last night. You got off the field when you absolutely needed to at the end of the fourth quarter to give Michael Penix Jr. a chance to get you into field goal range to win the game. But the defense has to tackle better. I mean, last night was so frustrating watching it, but you got to give Jaden Daniels credit. The kid's going to be Offensive Rookie of the Year. He was incredible when it mattered most last night.
Yeah, D-Alford to me didn't stick out to where, I mean, of course, every guy on that field is going to have plays they want back, Michael Penix included, but D-Alford didn't stick out to me to where he was necessarily a liability of any sort. So, and look, maybe George saw something that, you know, I didn't, but D-Alford to me played fine. I think the defense overall, to Drew's point, was okay. They were okay to me. Missed a lot of tackles, to Drew's point. They just had no answer for Jaden Daniels and him using his legs. They had no answer for the Commanders' run game overall in the second half. I mean, they absolutely bullied the Falcons' defensive line in the second half. Couldn't tackle. Didn't seem like they were struggling getting off blocks, and when they did, they couldn't make the tackle. So, I mean,
Falcons were 2-10 on third down, Dylan. 2-10 on third down.
What is your, yeah.
And in the first half, they were methodical with their play calling. It was a great balance of run and pass. Bijan Robinson was unstoppable. You got to give credit to the Commanders. They made amazing adjustments at halftime. They essentially shut down the Falcons' run game in the second half. And the key here is they had long, sustaining drives that were chewing up clock. The Falcons couldn't get off the field, and it proved to be the difference in the game.
I mean, the third quarter was basically two long Commanders drives with a Falcons three and out sandwiched in between.
That's right. You're right about that. Let's go to Eric in Athens. What's up, Eric?
What's up?
What's up, Eric?
What's up, Eric?
I think the turning point was beginning of the third quarter. Falcons made that stop, but then they got that penalty for what, hitting the man beyond 5 yards.
Yeah, illegal contact.
And it was automatic first down.
Automatic first down. Yep. That's right. Kept the drive going. You know, you see some of the replays of that play by Malone, the linebacker, making some contact past 5 yards. I mean, is that a judgment call on the officials? I'm not so sure, Dylan. I mean, was he right at 5 yards or just past 5 yards? It certainly seemed like that on the broadcast. But, man, that stinks. You have to get off the field.
Have to.
And it just allowed the Commanders to continue to drive the ball, chew up clock, and it was too little too late for the Falcons.
And, Drew, it kind of goes back to what we've been talking about and what you've been mentioning, do a good job of mentioning all day, that situational football. The Falcons just were not good in certain situations. In the biggest situations, Raheem Morris not calling the timeouts, D'Angelo Malone getting the illegal contact there, and obviously Drew Dahlman, even though the Falcons are able to bounce back from it with this snap over Bijan Robinson's head, they were just not good in the situations they needed to be good in. And situational football, as always, is why you lost the game.
I do want to say one thing, though, because for all the blame that everybody's catching, I think at the end of this season, whether the Falcons make the playoffs or they don't after next Sunday, one person is going to be in the spotlight, and it's Terry Fontenot. I think that's very clear. I mean, you look around the league right now, some of these GMs who are just absolutely outing themselves, like Joe Schein, the New York Giants, like Ryan Poles with the Chicago Bears. I think there's been certain decisions that have been made that have gotten the Falcons to this situation. And, of course, Raheem Morris was just hired. He's not going anywhere, folks. Michael Penix Jr. has looked pretty damn good in his first two starts as a quarterback. He seems to be your future. I think Terry Fontenot is going to have to answer some really, really tough questions at the end of the season.
Let's go to Ice in Atlanta. What's up, Ice?
Yo, thanks for taking my call, man. I've been trying to articulate this for weeks now. So I'm going to speak a little bit on season, then I'm going to speak specifically on this game. I believe that Raheem Morris is responsible, including this game, for no less than 3 losses. His time management is very poor. I've watched him be a gambler on fourth downs for all the season, and I'm going to ask this, and I think Drew is going to be like, preach, Ice. If you've got a 3rd and 5 and you know that you're going to basically be looking for that first down, to me, you run the football knowing that it's 2-down territory. I've watched him throw the football rather than run it. We abandoned the running game last night in the second half when we were feasting on them for the first half. I don't understand how when the Commanders made adjustments and stuff, they ran, we collapsed the pocket and kept Penix, or excuse me, we kept Jaden Daniels under siege and stuff inside the pocket, but he broke containment on the outside. How did we not make adjustments for that? How didn't we spy him? Secondarily, timeouts, they're like golden tickets on a Monopoly board that get you out of jail. You don't get out of regulation or the first half or any side of the situation with any timeouts at all. And let me ask you guys this as a rhetorical question. Think about time clock management at the end of the first half when we got the football back with 40 seconds. We attempted a 56-yard field goal. We take timeouts and we get two more plays and we get 5 or 6 yards. Do we walk off the field in regulation with a dub or not? I got a personal message for Raheem. This is my city. Pack your bags, get out. Pick rocks with open-toed shoes. We got to get rid of this guy. He's been a debacle. We lost 3 games because of him this season. That puts us in control of the division, and we get into the playoffs without him.
Fiery passion that you have for this team.
You know, on the defending of Jaden Daniels, I thought the Falcons did an unbelievable job of keeping contain on him for the majority of the game. Want to point out that goal line touchdown where they ran the read option, zone read. Falcons had it defended perfectly. Jesse Bates is sitting there. I mean, it's an indefensible play. He makes an amazing pass to Zacchaeus in the end zone. Like, there's only so much you can do, and I hate having to say that because it's tough to hear as a fan of your favorite team, but the Falcons did everything they can. Jaden Daniels is just an elite athlete. He can outrun people. He can move the chains. It's exactly what they did. But to answer that rhetorical question, yes, of course, you call that timeout. You've got 16 extra seconds to run a couple more plays and move closer towards a 50-yard field goal, which Riley Patterson assumingly would have made.
Real quick, 2 seconds. I agree with all that you said, and I agree with some of the things that he said there. I don't agree with the fourth down take, though. A lot more coaches, I mean, Dan Campbell, we see a lot more coaches these days gamble on fourth down, so I don't think that was a fair assessment.
We'll get you caught up on the Hawks and Tampa Bay. What does the Falcons' loss mean for them moving forward? We're going in the huddle as well. On the other side, when we come back here on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Yeah, it's actually interesting. He was here in spirit because I think, you know, people, we talked about Dyson's impact defensively, and I think to the extent that our whole team is embracing that, you know, we're not going to be perfect, but usually it means that we're shifted and we're helping each other, and that leads to some deflections, and it's good to see.
That was Atlanta Hawks head coach Quinn Snyder talking about the team on setting season highs in steals without having Dyson Daniels with them. So that is tough there, but they were able to move to fifth place in the Eastern Conference. So again, shorthanded, but they found a way to beat the Heat 120 to 110. So Jalen Johnson scoring 28 and Trae Young finishes with a double-double. So that included 15 assists.
I'm going there. I'm going there, Tiff. I'm going there, Drew. We got to start having some serious talks about the Hawks. Oh, no. 4th straight win.
It's time.
Sound bite time. You? That's you that?
No.
That's somebody else?
That's Trae. That's Trae. Okay. The drop I have.
I was like,
but
what?
4th straight win.
Thank you, Trae.
4th straight win. Trae Young, 7-13 from three. Defense still look great. DeAndre Hunter, I mean, he continues to make his case for sixth man of the year. Was it 15 straight games now, 15 or more points? I think he's up to maybe like 10 straight games with 20 or more points. He had another, 26 last night, I believe it was. And this team, you just heard Quinn Snyder talk about how this team has embraced what Dyson Daniel does and how that's rubbed off on the team, even with Dyson Daniels not playing. That defensive effort, that defensive passion that is there now that hasn't been there in years past. Nobody wants to see the Atlanta Hawks right now. And if they can stay healthy, obviously barring injuries, nobody is going to want to see the Atlanta Hawks in the postseason. Right now, 5th spot in the East.
Wow.
They wouldn't even have to deal with all the play-in nonsense. They'll be straight up in the playoffs if they started today. I know there's still a long way to go, but the one thing that we have kind of talked about as far as not really a negative, but something that is needed to get better is Trae Young shooting the ball. And last night he shot 7 of 13 from 3. His shot is coming back. He's starting to get into a rhythm. Everybody else has continued to play great. The Atlanta Hawks, again, defensively, are this is probably one of the best defensive Hawks teams that we've seen in a while. The Atlanta Hawks are a – they're not a championship contender, but they're going to be a scary team in the East.
Guaranteed!
Thank you, Charles Barkley.
It's exciting. I mean, it's an exciting time if you're a Hawks fan for the reasons that you just explained, Dylan. And clearly the fashion in which they play is different from years past. I think it's been great to see Trey flourish in his new type of role with the talent that he has around him. With the way that Quinn Snyder wants him to play, he is an amazing facilitator. There's no doubt about it. I mean, Stake, as he will be the first to tell you, is one of the best basketball minds in our great city. There's no question about it. And he is absolutely loving the style that the Atlanta Hawks are playing with. We've had Quinn Snyder on the Steakhouse as well. You can hear the excitement in his voice, and as Christmas is now behind us, the NBA season really starts to get serious, and the Hawks have put themselves in a very good position.
Well said there. It is time now to go in the huddle.
Big Jaden Daniels fan tonight. Just rooting hard. That's it.
That voice that you just heard, that was Baker Mayfield talking to Evan Washburn of CBS. And yeah, he was a big Jaden Daniels fan and probably is even more so now that the Commanders beat the Atlanta Falcons last night. So, of course, a lot of moving parts somewhat for the Falcons if they do want to try to get into the postseason. So, because Tampa now must lose to New Orleans in Week 18, and that means the Falcons have to beat the Carolina Panthers, and that is who the Bucs pretty much just crushed in their game, 48-14. Mayfield, 5 touchdowns, 359 yards. So the Bucs staying alive in the playoff race, and Baker sticking it to his former team.
Yeah, the Bucs really can turn it on when they want to. I mean, the Panthers' defense was horrendous yesterday. I know a lot of people were high on them given their really resurgence towards the second half of the season. I think they were 6-1 against the spread in their last 7 games. That came crashing down in fantastic fashion yesterday. The Bucs now in the driver's seat of the NFC South. I mean, look, crazier things have happened in Week 18s. Would it be crazy if the Bucs lost to the Saints? No, not at all. Would it be crazy if the Falcons lost to the Panthers? No, not at all. So both teams have to take care of business on Sunday and see where the chips fall.
It's any given Sunday. It's any given Sunday. And we aren't usually Aints fans here in the city of Atlanta. We aren't usually Aints fans in this building. But we're going to be Aints fans coming up this Sunday. And look, this is a Tampa Bay Buccaneers team that did lose to Cooper Rush and the Dallas Cowboys. I know Cooper Rush is definitely a more seasoned and better quarterback, let's just be honest, than Spencer Rattler is. But again, like Drew Portland's point, stranger things have happened. And look, maybe the Bucs, I don't think this has happened, but maybe they come in sleepwalking, think they're just going to trance their way to another NFC South crown, and the Saints sneak up on them. We'll see.
Can I show some love here, some local love, as the playoff picture is now becoming in clear focus?
Please do.
My alma mater, Peachtree Ridge High School, is going to be very well represented in the NFL playoffs. Cameron Hayward, my teammate from the fifth grade, he obviously an all-pro D-tackle for the Steelers. Steelers have clinched a playoff spot. His brother, Connor Hayward, Peachtree Ridge grad, he will be in the playoffs. Both of them will be. Orlando Brown, starting tackle for the Cincinnati Bengals. The Bengals still have a chance to make the playoffs. Orlando Brown, a Peachtree Ridge grad, could be in the playoffs as well. And this will hurt for Falcons fans to hear, but the Washington Commanders defensive backs coach Tommy Donatell, former quarterback at Peachtree Ridge, clinched his playoff spot last night. So Peachtree Ridge Lions, shout out to the Ridge, G County, well represented in the NFL playoffs this year.
With that, can I ask you a question, Drew Butler?
Yes, please.
And Tiff, I want you to answer this too. If the Cincinnati Bengals find a way to make the postseason after where they're going to have to come back from, does Joe Burrow deserve to be in the MVP conversation?
Yes.
Absolutely, right?
Insane.
Unbelievable.
He is playing insane football right now. I think what has to happen is that the Dolphins have to lose.
Correct.
Yes.
The Bengals have to win.
Yes. And I believe the Broncos have to lose.
That's right. So Bengals still have a chance. And as I said about Jaden Daniels and the Commanders, nobody wants to play them in the playoffs. I can guarantee you nobody wants to play Joe Burrow and that Bengals offense if the Bengals make the playoffs.
T. Higgins
went off.
T. Higgins and Joe Burrow put the team on their back.
Sick.
It will be a tough conversation for the MVP if they do make it, because I don't think anyone does more for their team than Lamar Jackson and, of course, Josh Allen.
What's up with my guy, Ryan Clark, former teammate of mine in Pittsburgh? He is finding himself in all sorts of hot water around his takes around who should get the MVP for reasons that you may or may not agree with. I don't know. I think it's a two-man race right now, as you guys just mentioned. Either Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen or Joe Burrow. It's going to be a fascinating MVP race to see how it shakes out.
It's going to be a close one. Minnesota beating Green Bay 27-25. The Packers surging late in this game to try to win. Obviously, they did not. But the Sam Darnold experience is a ride that I don't think anyone with the Vikings wants to come off of. And it makes for a conversation of, do they keep him next season? And you obviously probably should, because if you look at some of these teams out there, when you look at maybe the Packers in history, you have a young quarterback sitting behind a veteran quarterback playing well. Darnold, the response he got in the locker room post-game was really telling and really cool to see that team really surround him. He is the first starting quarterback in NFL history to record 14 wins in his first season with a team.
He certainly deserves to be brought back by the Vikings next year. Newsflash for Minnesota in that front office, it's going to cost you.
Yeah.
Salary caps continue to rise. Quarterbacks usually take up 10 to 15% of your salary cap. That equates to about $40 to $45 million per year.
But rookie deal for J.J. McCarthy, yeah. So he's not as bad, maybe?
Maybe not as bad. You bring up a great point there with J.J. McCarthy. And for all the Falcons fans, again, going back to the Kirk Cousins signings, that's just the going rate for a starting quarterback. So Sam Darnold, congrats to you. You've made yourself a lot of money by winning 14 games in your first season with the Vikings.
Yeah, I don't think... I feel very happy for Sam Darnold. You know, despite, obviously, they beat up on the Falcons a few weeks ago. Despite all that, after coming from or getting drafted by the Jets, and, you know, that was a turmoil there. Things didn't work out in Carolina. He spent some time in San Fran. We knew that wasn't going to be a long-term stop for him. Gets his opportunity in Minnesota and just absolutely balls out. The Minnesota Vikings for sure have to bring back Sam Darnold. Let J.J. McCarthy learn behind this guy. Don't rush him in when you got a guy like that.
I love this. This is on a separate tangent here. Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, Jared Goff, like guys that were cast away and now having like a
monster
heyday.
Seasons.
Like, yes, it is just so cool to see when you find the right spot, the right staff, what can happen.
And then the teammates going back to Sam Darnold. Teammates obviously love him. You see the celebration that they gave for him last night after he threw a career high in yardage. I think it was 364. They throw water all over him, hoist him up in the locker room. Kevin Connell's just sitting in the back smiling, watching the culture he's built. So, I mean, teammates love him. He's balling out. Vikings, do your job.
Let's talk about the updated NFL draft order, because so much is being discussed about culture. So much is being discussed about guys playing for their futures. Having been in NFL locker rooms, you are absolutely crazy if you think anybody on a roster gives a you-know-what about next year's draft order. Look no further than the Las Vegas Raiders. They've won two in a row. Look no further than the Giants yesterday beating the Indianapolis Colts. The Giants, who were sitting atop the draft order, win that game, now move to third in the draft order. The Las Vegas Raiders, who were wanting to tank for Shedeur Sanders, have won two straight TIFF. They're now 4-12, picking eighth in the draft for next year.
It is wild to see, and the fact we were talking about this in our meeting, that Chicago is picking ninth.
And the Bears stink. They're awful. 4-12, and they're the ninth draft pick right now.
It's crazy.
That is absolutely wild. I mean, again, Garrett brought up a good point, produced behind the glass. When the Falcons finished 4-12 a few years ago, we had the fourth overall pick. Bears, like you said, 4-12, lost 10 games in a row after their loss yesterday, I believe it was, and they're picking ninth. I mean, just the amount of bad football teams are on the NFL this year is crazy.
Real quick here, because Philadelphia beat Dallas handedly 41-7. So Saquon Barkley, 167 yards, he surpasses 2,000 yards, so one of eight in NFL history to do that. Of course, we all know Eric Dickerson holds the record with 2,105. So all Barkley needs is 101 in week 18 when they face the Giants.
His former team, you got to give him a chance to go out there and set the NFL record for single season rushing yards against his former team. Put the nail in the coffin of Joe Schein's tenure as the GM of the New York Giants. They let Saquon walk. He goes to the division rival Eagles. This dude is an absolute freak. He should get the NFL single season rushing record next week.
He should, and I will be very happy for him if he does. And I hate to be the guy that has to ask this question, but do y'all think people are going to look at it differently because of the number of games?
Well, they should. But look, that's the new era of the NFL, and if he has 18 or 17 to play, let him do it. Let him get the record, and you'll let Eric Dickerson whine about it if it is broken.
When we come back, let's on this Falcons talk for this show. That tough loss to the Commanders, but again, the future is bright for Michael Penix. We'll be right back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Yeah, it's actually interesting. He was here in spirit because I think, you know, people, we talked about Dyson's impact defensively, and I think to the extent that our whole team is embracing that, you know, we're not going to be perfect, but usually it means that we're shifted and we're helping each other, and that leads to some deflections, and it's good to see.
That was Atlanta Hawks head coach Quinn Snyder talking about the team on setting season highs in steals without having Dyson Daniels with them. So that is tough there, but they were able to move to fifth place in the Eastern Conference. So again, shorthanded, but they found a way to beat the Heat 120 to 110. So Jalen Johnson scoring 28 and Trae Young finishes with a double-double. So that included 15 assists.
I'm going there. I'm going there, Tiff. I'm going there, Drew. We got to start having some serious talks about the Hawks.
Oh, no.
Fourth straight win.
It's time.
Sound bite time. You? That's you that?
No.
That's somebody else?
That's Trey. That's Trey. Okay. The drop I have.
I was like,
but
what?
Four straight win.
Oh, there,
thank
go.
You, Trey. Four straight win. Trae Young, 7-13 from three. Defense still look great. DeAndre Hunter, I mean, he continues to make his case for sixth man of the year. Was it 15 straight games now, 15 or more points? I think he's up to maybe like 10 straight games with 20 or more points. He had another, 26 last night, I believe it was. And this team, you just heard Quinn Snyder talk about how this team has embraced what Dyson Daniel does and how that's rubbed off on the team, even with Dyson Daniels not playing. That defensive effort, that defensive passion that is there now that hasn't been there in years past. Nobody wants to see the Atlanta Hawks right now. And if they can stay healthy, obviously barring injuries, nobody is going to want to see the Atlanta Hawks in the postseason. Right now, fifth spot in the East.
Wow.
They would be out of – they wouldn't even have to deal with all the play-in nonsense. They would be straight up in the playoffs if they started today. I know there's still a long way to go. But the one thing that we have kind of talked about as far as – not really a negative, but something that is needed to get better is Trae Young shooting the ball. And last night, he shot 7-13 from three. His shot is coming back. He's starting to get into a rhythm. Everybody else has continued to play great. The Atlanta Hawks, again, defensively, this is probably one of the best defensive Hawks teams that we've seen in a while. The Atlanta Hawks they're not a championship contender, but they're going to be a scary team in the East.
Guaranteed!
Thank you, Charles Barkley.
It's exciting. I mean, it's an exciting time if you're a Hawks fan for the reasons that you just explained, Dylan. And clearly, the fashion in which they play is different from years past. I think it's been great to see Trae flourish in his new type of role.
Yeah.
With the talent that he has around him, with the way that Quinn Snyder wants him to play, he is an amazing facilitator. There's no doubt about it. I mean, Stake, as he will be the first to tell you, is one of the best basketball minds in our great city. There's no question about it. And he is absolutely loving the style that the Atlanta Hawks are playing with. We've had Quinn Snyder on the Steakhouse as well. You can hear the excitement in his voice, and as Christmas is now behind us, the NBA season really starts to get serious, and the Hawks have put themselves in a very good position.
Well said there. It is time now to go in the huddle.
Big Jaden Daniels fan tonight. Just rooting hard, that's it.
That voice that you just heard, that was Baker Mayfield talking to Evan Washburn of CBS. And yeah, he was a big Jaden Daniels fan and probably is even more so now that the Commanders beat the Atlanta Falcons last night. So, of course, a lot of moving parts somewhat for the Falcons if they do want to try to get into the postseason. So, because Tampa now must lose to New Orleans in Week 18, and that means the Falcons have to beat the Carolina Panthers, and that is who the Bucs pretty much just crushed.
Yeah.
In their game, 48-14. Mayfield, 5 touchdowns, 359 yards. So the Bucs staying alive in the playoff race, and Baker sticking it to his former team.
Yeah, the Bucs really can turn it on when they want to. I mean, the Panthers' defense was horrendous yesterday. I know a lot of people were high on them, given their really resurgence towards the second half of the season. I think they were 6-1 against the spread in their last 7 games. That came crashing down in fantastic fashion yesterday. The Bucs now in the driver's seat of the NFC South. I mean, look, crazier things have happened in Week 18. Would it be crazy if the Bucs lost to the Saints? No, not at all. Would it be crazy if the Falcons lost to the Panthers? No, not at all. So both teams have to take care of business on Sunday and see where the chips fall.
It's any given Sunday. It's any given Sunday, and we aren't usually Aints fans here in the city of Atlanta. We aren't usually Aints fans in this building, but we're going to be Aints fans coming up this Sunday. And look, this is a Tampa Bay Buccaneers team that did lose to Cooper Rush and the Dallas Cowboys. I know Cooper Rush is definitely a more seasoned and better quarterback, let's just be honest, than Spencer Rattler is. But again, like Drew brought on this point, stranger things have happened. And look, maybe the Bucs, I don't think this has happened, but maybe they come in sleepwalking, think they're just going to transfer their way to another NFC South crown, and the Saints sneak up on them. We'll see.
Can I show some love here, some local love, as the playoff picture is now becoming in clear focus?
Please do.
My alma mater, Peachtree Ridge High School, is going to be very well represented in the NFL playoffs. Cameron Hayward, my teammate from the fifth grade, he obviously an all-pro D-tackle for the Steelers. Steelers have clinched a playoff spot. His brother, Connor Hayward, Peachtree Ridge grad, he will be in the playoffs. Both of them will be. Orlando Brown, starting tackle for the Cincinnati Bengals. The Bengals still have a chance to make the playoffs. Orlando Brown, a Peachtree Ridge grad, could be in the playoffs as well. And this will hurt for Falcons fans to hear, but the Washington Commanders defensive backs coach, Tommy Donatell, former quarterback at Peachtree Ridge, clinched his playoff spot last night. So Peachtree Ridge Lions, shout out to the Ridge, G County, well represented in the NFL playoffs this year.
With that, can I ask you a question, Drew Butler?
Yes, please.
And Tiff, I want you to answer this too. If the Cincinnati Bengals find a way to make the postseason after where they're going to have to come back from, does Joe Burrow deserve to be in the MVP conversation?
Yes.
He absolutely, right?
Insane.
Unbelievable.
He is playing insane football right now. I think what has to happen is that the Dolphins have to lose.
Correct.
Yes.
The Bengals have to win.
Yes. And I believe the Broncos have to lose.
That's right. So Bengals still have a chance. And as I said about Jaden Daniels and the Commanders, nobody wants to play them in the playoffs. I can guarantee you nobody wants to play Joe Burrow and that Bengals offense if the Bengals make the playoffs.
T. Higgins
went off.
T. Higgins and Joe Burrow put the team on their back.
Sick.
It will be a tough conversation for the MVP if they do make it, because I don't think anyone does more for their team than Lamar Jackson and, of course, Josh Allen.
What's up with my guy, Ryan Clark, former teammate of mine in Pittsburgh? He is finding himself in all sorts of hot water around his takes around who should get the MVP for reasons that you may or may not agree with. I don't know. I think it's a two-man race right now, as you guys just mentioned. Either Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen or Joe Burrow. It's going to be a fascinating MVP race to see how it shakes out.
It's going to be a close one. Hey, Minnesota beating Green Bay 27-25, the Packers surging late in this game to try to win. Obviously, they did not. But the Sam Darnold experience is a ride that I don't think anyone with the Vikings wants to come off of, and it makes for a conversation of do they keep him next season? And you obviously probably should, because if you look at some of these teams out there, when you look at maybe the Packers in history, you have a young quarterback sitting behind a veteran quarterback playing well. Darnold, the response he got in the locker room post-game was really telling and really cool to see that team really surround him. He is the first starting quarterback in NFL history to record 14 wins in his first season with a team.
He certainly deserves to be brought back by the Vikings next year. Newsflash for Minnesota in that front office, it's going to cost you.
Yeah.
Salary caps continue to rise. Quarterbacks usually take up 10 to 15% of your salary cap. That equates to about $40 to $45 million per year.
But rookie deal for J.J. McCarthy, yeah. So he's not as bad, maybe?
Maybe not as bad. You bring up a great point there with J.J. McCarthy. And for all the Falcons fans, again, going back to the Kirk Cousins signings, that's just the going rate for a starting quarterback. So, Sam Darnold, congrats to you. You've made yourself a lot of money by winning 14 games in your first season with the Vikings.
Yeah, I don't think... I feel very happy for Sam Darnold. You know, despite, obviously, they beat up on the Falcons a few weeks ago. Despite all that, after coming from or getting drafted by the Jets, and, you know, that was a turmoil there. Things didn't work out in Carolina. He spent some time in San Fran. We knew that wasn't going to be a long-term stop for him. Gets his opportunity in Minnesota and just absolutely balls out. The Minnesota Vikings for sure have to bring back Sam Darnold. Let J.J. McCarthy learn behind this guy. Don't rush him in when you got a guy like that.
I love this. This is on a separate tangent here. Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, Jared Goff, like guys that were cast away and now having like a
monster
heyday.
Seasons.
Like, yes, it is just so cool to see when you find the right spot, the right staff, what can happen.
And then the teammates going back to Sam Darnold. Teammates obviously love him. You see the celebration that they gave for him last night after he threw a career high in yardage. I think it was 364. They throw water all over him, hoist him up in the locker room. Kevin Connell's just sitting in the back smiling, watching the culture he's built. So, I mean, teammates love him. He's balling out. Vikings, do your job.
Let's talk about the updated NFL draft order, because so much is being discussed about culture. So much is being discussed about guys playing for their futures. Having been in NFL locker rooms, you are absolutely crazy if you think anybody on a roster gives a you-know-what about next year's draft order. Look no further than the Las Vegas Raiders. They've won two in a row. Look no further than the Giants yesterday beating the Indianapolis Colts. The Giants, who were sitting atop the draft order, win that game, now move to third in the draft order. The Las Vegas Raiders, who were wanting to tank for Shedeur Sanders, have won two straight TIFF. They're now 4-12, picking eighth in the draft for next year.
It is wild to see, and the fact we were talking about this in our meeting, that Chicago is picking ninth.
And the Bears stink. They're awful. 4-12, and they're the ninth draft pick right now.
It's crazy.
That is absolutely wild. I mean, again, Garrett brought up a good point, produced behind the glass. When the Falcons finished 4-12 a few years ago, we had the fourth overall pick. Bears, like you said, 4-12, lost 10 games in a row after their loss yesterday, I believe it was, and they're picking ninth. I mean, just the amount of bad football teams that are on the NFL this year is crazy.
Real quick here, because Philadelphia beat Dallas handedly 41-7. So Saquon Barkley, 167 yards, he surpasses 2,000 yards, so one of eight in NFL history to do that. Of course, we all know Eric Dickerson holds the record with 2,105. So all Barkley needs is 101 in Week 18 when they face the Giants.
His former team, you got to give him a chance to go out there and set the NFL record for single-season rushing yards against his former team. Put the nail in the coffin of Joe Schein's tenure as the GM of the New York Giants. They let Saquon walk. He goes to the division rival Eagles. This dude is an absolute freak. He should get the NFL single-season rushing record next week.
He should, and I will be very happy for him if he does, and I hate to be the guy that has to ask this question, but do y'all think people are going to look at it differently because of the number of games?
Well, they should. But look, that's the new era of the NFL, and if he has 18 or 17 to play, let him do it. Let him get the record, and you'll let Eric Dickerson whine about it if it is broken.
When we come back, let's this Falcons talk for this show. That tough loss to the Commanders, but again, the future is bright for Michael Penix. We'll be right back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.